We're next going to hear from Rhianne Gibson. Rhianne has been a research associate at the Institute for Community Health for 3 years. Her work spans numerous health topics, including youth substance use. And the topic of Rhianne's presentation is examining generational differences in perceptions of youth substance use and implications for prevention in a metro Boston suburb. Please help me in welcoming Rhianne.
Thank you. You may not be able to see me over there, but here I am. You guys have the prime location. Hopefully you can all hear me, though. So as was said, I'm going to be talking about generational differences in perceptions of youth substance use and implications for prevention based on some data collected from a metro Boston suburb. I have no financial relationships to disclose. First, I'll tell you a little bit about where I'm coming from. I work at the Institute for Community Health, and we work with community-based organizations, hospitals, community health centers, et cetera, to do program evaluation, participatory research, needs assessments, with the goal of using data-driven strategies to affect community health. I'm going to talk to you about some changes in substance use behaviors over generations and how they're impacting one Boston suburb. I'm going to talk a little bit about adult substance use behaviors and how that's impacting youth, and then I'm going to provide you with some recommendations to address changes in behaviors based off of some of our data. So substance use behaviors have changed. Most notably is the rate of opioid mortality over the past many years. This is just data from Massachusetts, but if you were to look at national data, you would see similar trends, and similarly in the community that we looked at, you would see a similar trend of increasing opioid mortality rates. Changes in drugs, the actual drugs and the use patterns have also changed. So the potency of marijuana has increased. The average THC levels rose from less than 1% in the mid-70s to more than 6% in 2002, and also the age of initiation has decreased. And then some of the drugs have also changed, like bath salts, synthetic marijuana, and things like that have increased, and the use has been a little bit different than parents who are adults now. Than when they were youth. So some of those patterns have changed a little bit. And also the substance use mixing patterns have changed. So the potency of marijuana is higher, and some of these drugs are newer, but then also youth are using alcohol in combination with marijuana, in combination with prescription drugs, in ways that are a little bit different than have been used in the past. And then, of course, we can't really talk about this changes in generations without talking about changes in technology. Youth have the internet at their fingertips with laptops, with their smartphones. You can Google any drug you want. You can, you know, open up a medicine cabinet, find a drug, and Google what its effects may be. Or you can just use the internet in ways that were not available 20, 30 years ago. In addition, we see, I don't know if you can read the cartoon on the left. It's a raccoon tunes, and they're talking to a police officer saying, "I wasn't texting while driving, I was updating my status, see?" So there are ways that cell phone use is changing, texting while driving, and using phones while driving have evolved. And if you combine some substance use with this change in technology, you see some potentially harmful behaviors. And also Facebook is alive and kicking, and you can go on Facebook and look through their friends' pictures and see friends, you know, having a great time at a wedding maybe. And and that can influence peer pressure. So these changes have a lasting community effect, and this is where I'm going to talk a little bit about some data we found in one community, one smaller metro Boston community. It's smaller, so it's under 50,000, upper middle class, so the median household income is about 100,000, predominantly white community. If you look at their substance use data, they're pretty in line with the communities around them, and they're pretty in line with the state, actually a little bit lower than the state and lower than the national rates, but they have a pretty engaged substance use coalition that's working to look at these issues and think critically about ways that they can intervene. And so they contracted with us over a year ago now, and we did some qualitative data. We collected some qualitative data with them. We did some parent focus groups, some community interviews, and some student focus groups. So we actually talked to about 50 people. So we have some pretty rich qualitative data. And then we looked at some of their quantitative data that they've collected on their own, parent surveys, coalition member surveys, et cetera. And then we looked at some secondary data, some state data, and some youth risk behavior survey data. And so what we found in this community is that there is limited awareness and understanding of youth prescription drug use among adults in the community. Many adults and many youth don't really hear about prescription drug use. Parents have limited knowledge of proper disposal and storage and not enough education around that. And parents and stakeholders are really concerned about newer and more dangerous drugs and mixing patterns, but don't really have all the information yet. So one parent said, I'm concerned about the use of prescription drugs. Youth don't know what they're using. They're taking white pills from other people. And then if we look at some youth health survey data on the left, you'll see that prescription drug access, kids are getting it from friends, from parents without their knowledge, or potentially on school property. And then qualitatively, we're seeing that parents' medicine cabinets are a source for drugs, other youth dealing, and then some youth on prescription medication are actually approached by other kids to buy their pills. And then the parents and stakeholders really felt that the medical community was over-prescribing, so that there are just too many drugs out there and they're pretty accessible. And one stakeholder said, you think maybe I can't get someone to buy me alcohol, but I can go to a medicine cabinet and take one of mom's pills or dad's pills or grandma's pills. And then if we look at some of the things going on around marijuana, and you look at marijuana and alcohol and how they're related to drunk driving, we'll see that there's a pretty big difference in perceptions of harm around marijuana and driving. So from the right moving left, you'll see that more that you think that riding in a car driven by someone who's under the influence of alcohol is pretty dangerous, but then fewer youth think that driving in a car driven by someone who's under the influence of marijuana is dangerous. And then riding in a car driven by a high school student under the influence is higher for marijuana than alcohol. And this is 2012 data, and their 2014 data was recently available in the last month, so I took a quick look at it. I wasn't able to update these slides, but the riding in a car by a high school student under the influence of alcohol actually went down to 8%, and under the influence of marijuana went up to 23%. And then driving in a car under the influence, you can also see it's different, higher for marijuana than alcohol. So as some parents said, it seems like kids are good about not drinking and driving, but they think they can smoke pot and drive. And generally, people think using marijuana is just a phase that you don't get addicted. And if we look at that second quote a little bit more, there's lots of research over that, and it's pretty conflicting. But if you think about all of the other behaviors that are different, like the driving and the technology and the phones and the mixing, that's where that harm comes in that we don't really, there's mixed research about addiction, but when you're combining it with all these other harmful things, that's where there's potential for lots of harm to take place. So when you look at adult substance use, when we talked to adults and we talked to youth about adult substance use patterns, we actually found something really interesting, and maybe this is a result of who we talked to or just a small sample of people that we spoke to, but when we talked to parents and stakeholders, they felt that drinking is really seen as a strong part of the adult culture in the community, that parents and adults are drinking at sporting events, schools, community events, at private parties at their homes, and there's a pretty strong drinking culture among the adults, and they're drinking around youth often. And they thought that that adults in the community were reflections of irresponsible drinking behaviors sometimes. But then when we spoke to the youth, they thought that their parents were and other adults in the community were engaging in responsible drinking use. So maybe that's a result of the people we talked to, maybe that's a result of the smaller sample size. We don't really know, but there is that interesting dynamic at play there. And so if we think mostly about the parent and adult opinions that this adult drinking is happening, and we know what we know about role modeling, if adults are in fact modeling a drinking culture, and youth are imitating that, and they're imitating it in ways that they're doing it with the mixing and the prescription drug use in ways that adults aren't doing it and adults don't know about, that's where another place that we see sort of harm, potential for harm play out. So some suggested interventions, and these again came from the mostly qualitative findings. So prescription drug take-back days and drop-off points. We talked with the police, some people in the police department, and they felt really strongly about this, and we're really trying to get it going, but had some, and when we talked to them the first time around, they were having some issues with that. Most recently, they have a one drop-off point in the town, so people can go and drop off their drugs, and they'll be taken care of. But they felt that people really don't know about it just yet, and they need to encourage and incentivize prescription drug disposal, and that there needs to be more advocacy in the medical and the pharmaceutical community about prescribing, reducing prescription sizes and monitoring the prescriptions better. Expanding health knowledge. This was felt by youth and adults that health education needs to happen younger ages, particularly ninth grade. I think in the community now it starts in 11th grade, so a lot of people felt that ninth grade was really in a really important year for health education, and then even younger than that. And a lot of people mentioned that the education doesn't include talking about specific drugs. It just, you know, drugs are bad. It doesn't make distinctions between different types of drugs and really hone in on specific drugs. They don't talk about mixing behaviors, and they don't talk as much about driving while high. And then similarly, parents aren't really getting this information either. And youth and parents really felt that speakers with real-life stories were the most were a really important way to drive home some of these messages. And then conversations among families. We just heard about the importance of that. People thought that parents, both parents and adult and youth, felt that some families talk about it, some don't, and that there are lots of barriers to talking, to having these conversations. There's a lack of shared experience, feelings of not being able to relate, and that these conversations, again, need to start younger, start earlier, and be really proactive instead of reactive to things happening in the community. And parents felt that they needed more resources and information. And this is an interesting quote from a youth we spoke to, saying it would be helpful if parents learned how to go about asking their kids about substance abuse. We don't know how to address them, and they don't know how to address us. So it's important that both sides learn to go how to talk. And then even more, in addition to the conversations within families, there need to be more conversations among the community, adults in the community, so that they can talk to each other about things that are going on, things that they're seeing, things that are particularly dangerous or different that they maybe haven't heard of before. And there's little conversation in this community between parents about substance use. Some talk about it, some don't. Some don't know all the information even when they are talking about it. And people feel there's some barriers. So people feel judged when they bring up, you know, my kid did this or my kid did that or I saw this. They feel like there's a community of shaming and blaming and judgment, so that aspect of the culture in the community needs to be changed. And once that happens, or in alignment with these conversations, the conversations need to happen. Yeah, that's it. Thank you.